I'll call the Audit, Compliance, and Title IX Committee to order. First, we'll have a roll call.
Chair Carter.
Here.
Vice Chair Hayes.
Here.
Regent Del Carlo.
Here.
Regent McMichael.
Here.
Regent Perkins.
Here.
We do have a quorum.
Do we have any public comment in ELCO? Doesn't look like it. Do we have any public comment in Reno?
There's none in Reno.
Any public comment in Las Vegas? Seeing none, we'll move on to item number two, consent items. Do we have a motion? So we have a second. So consent items, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed say no. Moving on to item number three, Foundation WNC. Chief Internal Auditor Josenberry.
Thank you, Chair Carter. For the record, Josenberry, Chief Internal Auditor. In the audit summary document, I've included a table of the internal audit reports being presented today, along with key observations. WNC Foundation is our first audit report being presented today, and my compliments to my team and everyone involved. As this committee likely knows, this is really only the second time we've performed an audit in this area before. And just some quick background and reminders on that. So these foundations, as the regents know, are subject to separate financial statement audits by outside CPA firms, the results of which will be shared during the meeting tomorrow morning. So years ago, our risk assessment process was very heavily focused on financial risk. And since that financial review is performed annually by an outside firm, we didn't really have foundations on our radar. So with the revamp of our risk assessment process and considerations of other risks, operational, regulatory, reputation, to name a few, we felt it was worthwhile to take a look at some of these entities with a slightly different lens. To that end, I think we had some useful recommendations related to cash controls, contract compliance, and classification of items into gift accounts for enhanced tracking. Thanks.
Do we have any questions from the board? Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Do I have a second? From Laura Perkins, Maria Perkins. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay. Moving on to item number four, travel in Nevada State College. Chief Internal Auditor, Josenberry.
Thank you, Chair Carter. For the record, Josenberry. We've talked in this committee before about evolving and modernizing some of the deliverables we have. You may recall our six-month exception reports that come to the September and March meetings. We've added graphs, metrics, and did some reformatting and provided the committee with essentially the same information, but in probably half as many pages. In addition to our traditional audit observations and recommendations, this report includes some comparative data on travel spend, use of travel cards. For the report itself, we have recommendations that really modernize some controls, including adding stronger automated controls over timeliness of travel documentation processing. Thank you.
Do we have any questions for Chief Internal Auditor Josenberry? No? Motion to accept. So moved by Regent Perkins, second by Regent Del Carlo. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Moving on to item number five, Crime Statistics Assurance INSHI. Chief Internal Auditor, Joseph Sunbury.
Thank you, Chair Carter. For the record, Joe Sunbury. One of the ways internal audit can add value is providing assurance over information that comes to the board and other important stakeholders. In fact, on the audit plan approved by this committee last meeting, we included several hundred hours in the budget dedicated to this type of item. This crime stats assurance review falls into that type of category and was on a previous audit plan, originally intended to provide assurance regarding historical reported numbers. But in looking back historically, it's also important to ensure consistency in current and future reporting processes and mechanisms. I think that's where the value of these audits comes in. As we got into this review, we sampled UNR, CSN, and UNLV. Certainly appreciate the cooperation of the departments involved. There's a lot of coordination along the way, and as you can see in their detailed responses, management has been very proactive. The recommendation should lead to corrections of minor discrepancies, enhancement of controls, communications, and consistency in reporting and documentation maintained across all institutions. I do also want to note, I think we were a little ahead of the curve in looking into an area like this. The Association of College and University Auditors, or ACUA, came out just recently, within the last month or two, for hot topics that internal audits may want to take a look into or at least consider for their future audit plans, and Clery Act compliance was actually on there. So the fact that this was on our radar and we've already completed that audit, I think, is a good sign. So thanks.
Do you have any questions for Chief Internal Auditor Joe Sunbury? I think this will be an interesting follow-up report. I think there's a lot of suggestions in there, and as we have a new team and stuff coming in, I think there'll be a lot of interesting things to get out of the follow-up report. Do you have a motion to accept this report?
I'll second.
There you go, Regent Perkins, and then second by Regent Hayes. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries. On to item number 6, Internal Audit and Compliance Department Updates, and she, Chief Internal Auditor, Joseph Sunbury.
Thank you, Chair Carter. For the record, Joe Sunbury, Chief Internal Auditor. We introduced this section as a standing item to be able to provide departmental updates and, more importantly, have a placeholder to discuss risk. So in the past, I've used this platform to update the committee on financial aid-related findings, walk through updated risk assessment methodology, and speak about work that Internal Audit was doing related to other board initiatives. At the last meeting, you may recall we had a placeholder to discuss internal audit, one to discuss compliance, and one for Title IX. And we'll certainly continue to give those areas standalone platforms in the future. But today's update is really a combination of all three of those. You may recall at the board's special meeting in October, the regents approved amendments to the compliance department charter. And as part of that change, the role of compliance director was modified to that of compliance coordinator. In the month plus since that meeting, we spent time identifying what types of activities this role would lead and participate in, including helping me with facilitating submissions received from our incident management system, or NSHE, compliance line. I think we've identified a way to effectively accomplish that role in a very efficient manner, and at our next meeting, you can expect I'll bring forward some proposed amendments for your review. And I'll happy to stop there and answer any questions. Thanks.
Are there any questions for Chief Internal Auditor Joseph Sunbury? We're going to take about a 5-minute recess while Grant Thornton gets set up for their external auditing reports. We'll go down to item 7, communication with those charged with governance, and she, Grant Thornton. Do you want to give an intro? Just hit the button there.
Good morning. Kim McCormick with Grant Thornton. Well, my purpose in being here this morning is to brief the audit committee on the results of the annual audit for NSHE and the two medical practice plans associated with UNR and UNLV. And we have a number of agenda items that we'll walk through with respect to this report out. And we will be starting with the audit of NSHE itself. And so that's agenda item number 7, attachment A-7. So as NSHE wraps up its fiscal year ended June 30, 2019, closes the books, has us in to do the audit, the process really culminates in us rendering an opinion on the financial statements for the year and also compliance with respect to some federal grants and contracts. And those reports are all finalized and in your document, but one of the last important steps is reporting out to this committee about the results and giving you a chance to answer questions about not only the process but also the end result. And so we facilitate that communication with this first document, which sometimes we call the required communications with those charged with governance, the audit committee. And this document in attachment A-7 really highlights the areas of focus for the audit. It's a sizable document, so I'm not going to walk you through every page. But just to give you a sense of the process, it actually starts very early in the spring, and there's a good visual of that on page 7 of 76 of this particular slide deck. Our process starts actually in March when we meet with the controllers and plan out the audit timeline and the areas of focus for the year. And as you can see, it wraps up in the November time frame, obviously, with the report out to you. The significant areas of focus for the financial statement audit are highlighted on the next few pages. As you might expect, the key revenue streams that manifest themselves in the financial reporting are a big area of focus, whether it's tuition revenue, appropriation revenue, federal grants and contracts revenue, the sponsored projects are all big areas of focus for the audit. And you'll see some of this, the audit procedures that we perform in connection with that over in the right-hand side of the next few slides. Another big area of focus, because it's a big number on your balance sheet, is your pension liability, along with your post-retirement liability. INCHI records its share of the total state obligation in that regard, and so those programs are audited, and we in turn audit INCHI's slice of those particular obligations that make their way to the financial statements. Other key areas of focus are the investment portfolio, looking at the fair value and the disclosures that go with it. So that's the financial statement audit and our big areas of focus. The other audit that I just want to remind you happens simultaneously is what we call the uniform guidance audit. This is an audit not of the financial statements, but an audit of compliance with some of the rules and regulations that go with receiving federal awards. So if you look at page 14 of 76 of this document, this gives you a good visual of the programs that were subject to audit in fiscal year 2019. And you'll see that there were two programs that met the criteria to undergo the compliance audit. The first is the Student Financial Aid program. This is the very large $390 million program that, frankly, meets the criteria to undergo this audit every year. Okay, and then there was a second one, and this is the Career and Technical Education program. This is funded through the U.S. government, gets passed through the state of Nevada, and actually makes its way down to the community colleges. It's a much smaller program in comparison. It's about a $3 million spend, and like I say, most of that is spent down at the community colleges. When we get to the next agenda item, we'll go over all the formal results for these audits, but at a high level, for the second program, the Career and Technical Education, the audit went very well. There were no findings, and we issued a clean opinion with respect to compliance. On the Student Financial Aid audit, there were findings. There were seven of them. You may recall that this is a program that does experience findings, and I've reported them to you in the past. Our opinion on the overall compliance was clean, with the exception of one particular area with respect to a new compliance requirement that we were asked by the Office of Management and Budget to test this year for all of our college audits. So that's the highlight with respect to the compliance audit. I'm going to have you page ahead a few pages to page 16 of 76, and we're going back now to the financial statement audit. One of the required communications that go with any financial statement audit is that we share with the audit committee if any adjustments were posted to the financial statements as a result of audit procedures that were performed. There was one adjustment posted. This had to do with an issue of refinancing debt in 2018, and the new debt was put on the books. The old debt was taken off the books, but the old debt was taken off the books a little bit prematurely because this was what was recalled a crossover advance refunding. And so it does meet the criteria to take off the books. I believe it's 2020 or 2021, but it was a little premature to take it off in 2018. So it was reinstated back on the books. This really had no impact on the bottom line for the year, just a very minor impact, but it was a balance sheet issue. So the proceeds from the refunding and also the original debt were put back on the balance sheet. So that was an adjustment that was posted, and you'll see when we get to our internal control letter, we did have a comment and a recommendation with respect to this. The other required communications in this document are fairly benign. They're here for your reading, but nothing I think that I need to emphasize in our meeting today. But one thing I will point out before we leave this document, if you go to page 41 of 76, actually, page 40 of 76, we did highlight, just for your reading pleasure at a later time, some industry updates with respect to higher education, gathering some information from a number of different sources. So we hope you find that helpful. So that is what I think is important to cover for this particular agenda item. Any questions before we move on to agenda item number 8?
Any questions? Regent Hayes.
7 says for a possible action. Do we need to take an action on it?
Yes. So do we have a motion?
What would the motion be for, just to accept the report? Because were there recommendations in it? No, it was just a report, right? Do we need to accept a report, or is it just an informational? I was confused when I read through this before the meeting.
Council.
Is it mostly an information item, or is there something to accept? What would be the action?
James Martinez, for the record, I would direct the question to staff. Are there certain recommendations that need to be in the motion, or is this just an acceptance of the report itself?
Joe Sumberry, for the record. Historically, these required communications from our CPA firms have kind of gone hand in hand with the reports themselves, so we have made them action items historically. That's all the background I have. I don't know that you need to per se, but
it just seems, as I was reading through it, it seems more like an information item, but it said for possible action, and we moved on. I just want to make sure, do we need to take an action? If not, if it's just really information and it said for possible action, it's possible we didn't have to take it. But
yeah, I think the important item would be the next one, which is the financial statement attached, which would have various recommendations involved. So for that one, for sure, we would want action.
So going forward, the ones that are just the communications, we probably don't need to take an action, but the acceptance of the financial statements, we will. Okay. Sorry to interrupt. So Mr. Chair, thank you.
Don, I think that's fair.
Quite all right. Moving on to agenda item number 8. What you'll see in the attachment to this agenda item is the actual financial statement itself of NSHE, and just for visuals' sake, this is it. It's a very big document. It's a 266-page document, and the way it's structured is that it starts with management's discussion and analysis of the financial results for NSHE for the year. So that's all the universities, all the foundations, the practice plans, all pulled together in one document. It's followed by the actual financial statements for the year in accordance with GAAP and the footnotes. That is followed by a 130-page schedule of federal awards, so every single federal award that made its way to NSHE for the year. It's a very robust part of the package. And then the final section talks about the audit results for the compliance audit, the uniform guidance audit, summarizes any findings in the form of internal control observations for the year, and includes management's corrective action plans with respect to those findings. At the tail end of the document, all the findings from the prior year audit are repeated with a summary of the current status. So there's a lot in this big document, and clearly more than we can go over in great detail today, but my goal is to give you the highlights and answer any questions that you have. With respect to the financial statement audit itself, our role after conducting our audit and doing the procedures that I outlined a moment ago, is to give an opinion as to whether or not we believe these financial statements are stated in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles. That is the purpose of the audit. And so the product of the audit is our opinion. And that opinion shows on page 11 of 266 of the document. And it's several pages long, but to paraphrase, our opinion is that the financial statements do, in fact, conform with generally accepted accounting principles. So this is an unmodified opinion or a clean opinion. So, of course, congratulations to you for that good result. The other reporting that we do in the context of the audit are the communications of internal control matters, and I'm going to have you flip far into the document to give you a summary of what those findings were for the year. We're going to go to page 220 of 266. And this few pages here summarize the current year findings for fiscal 2019, both for the financial statement audit and also for the uniform guidance compliance audit. For the financial statement audit, there was only one finding, and actually related back to that adjustment that we talked about a moment ago, the refunding of debt and the accounting for it. The internal control issue there is that it was not recognized to be a crossover refunding, and the recommendation we have prospectively, because you're going to refinance debt from time to time, is just to be on the lookout for that and make sure to understand the substance of the transaction to make sure the accounting's reflected properly. Again, just to emphasize, the adjustment was made in the financial statements, and so it is properly recorded for fiscal 19. So that was the one and only comment with respect to the financial statement audit. Last year, you recall, we actually had two comments with respect to the financial statement audit. One had to do with some timeliness issues in actually preparing the financial statements and some accuracy issues. Much of that was caused by the conversion to Workday. I'm happy to report that issue has been resolved, and so that does not repeat as a finding. And then our second finding from last year actually had to do with that 130-page schedule of federal awards. That also had some timeliness and some accuracy issues last year, and a big step forward this year in terms of improvement in that area. So I'm happy to report that finding does not repeat this year. So that's the financial statement audit. Let's talk about the compliance audit. As I mentioned, there were two federal programs that were audited this year. The career and technical program had no findings. That was a clean audit, smooth sailing. And that was nice to see, because that's a program that I don't recall that we've ever audited. It's never met the scope to be audited in the past. So all the community colleges did a fine job there. With respect to the student financial assistance cluster, we did have 8 findings, I believe, with respect to that particular audit. That was one more than this time last year. The overwhelming majority of the findings are repeat issues that have been identified in the prior year and in several years before that, with some, you know, ebb and flow about what school it took place at or what the underlying nature of the issue is. Student financial assistance is a program that comes with a lot of red tape. That red tape involves, you know, making sure the students who get the awards are eligible. A lot of the documentation that has to go with that, timing about drawing down the award dollars from banks and Department of Education, when monies have to be returned if a student, you know, discontinues midterm. There's a lot of details with respect to this particular program. And so it's inherently prone to error. Excuse me. It is a high-risk program, and that's why it's on the radar to review every year. So, you know, I think some improvement at some schools, some fell back a little bit. But the findings that you'll see in here should look very familiar to you, those of you who are veterans on this committee. The one finding that was new had to do with a new procedure that the U.S. Department of Education asked us to perform. This has to do with some student privacy rules associated with the Graham-Leach-Bliley Act, and they had us ask some very high-level questions about whether certain risk assessments were performed at the various schools with respect to that law. We did find a number of exceptions in that regard, and so you'll see that as a finding in the report as well. So as I mentioned earlier, for every finding and every recommendation that we list, management pulls together a corrective action plan, and you'll see that in the pages that follow. That's important because this document ultimately gets filed with the federal government. It does become a public document, and the federal awarding agencies review the status of the findings, whether or not it is a repeat issue, what the corrective action plan is, and they may very well follow up with the schools to see how progress is being made with respect to those corrective action plans. So I think really that's what I wanted to cover with respect to these two audits. Happy to answer any questions that you have.
Any questions? Sir, Michael, do you have a question? Oh, I'm sorry. So seeing no questions, a motion to accept the audit report. So moved by Regent Perkins, seconded by Regent Del Carlo. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed. Motion passes. Now we're on to item number 9, communication with those charged with governance, University of Nevada, Reno School of Medicine, Integrated Clinical Services, Inc.
Very good. Thank you. So we're moving on to now the standalone audits of the medical practice plans. The financial statements for these plans do get consolidated up into the financial statement that we just talked about, but each of them also have their own standalone audit. So we'll be walking through the same two reports for those respective audits. And we'll start with Integrated Clinical Services, the medical practice plans for UNR. And this first attachment in A-9 is structured much the same way the required communications document was for the NCHI audit. The key areas of focus for a medical practice plan audit are summarized starting on page 7 of that document, and as you might expect, it's all about testing the patient service revenue, the contractual revenue, the resulting receivables, and the reserves that are set up on the receivables. That is the big area of focus for the audit. On the issue of adjustments and past adjustments, again, we are required to share with you if any come up during the course of the audit. On page 11 of 34 is a summary of some small adjustments that were noted that management decided not to record in the financial statements because they were not material. We were comfortable with that conclusion, but we list them here because it is a requirement that the audit committee see those. And then on the following page, page 12 of 34, we list an adjustment that we propose that was posted and corrected in the financial statements because it was material and the management team agreed to this. This one adjustment is the subject matter of an internal control recommendation that we have made, and we'll get to that in the next agenda item. But at a high level, this issue, this $1.3 million issue, had to do with a grant that was recorded as revenue at ICS in fiscal 2018. And several months after the end of the year, ICS realized that that grant wasn't intended for them. It was intended for another school in the system, and so they promptly refunded it, and it went to the right place. But the correction of the 2018 financial statements wasn't made. So that process of identifying the issue and correcting it was good, but the last step of that should have been adjusting the financial statements to take that revenue out of 2018. And so because that did not happen timely, it ended up being corrected into 2019. And our suggestion was that the management team go back and take it out of 19 and put it in 18, the correction in 18 where it belonged. Management agreed with that, and so that has been reflected in the financial statements. These are the highlights that I wanted to share on this particular agenda item, and happy to answer any questions before we move on to agenda item number 10.
Any questions? We'll move on to item number 10, financial statements, University of Nevada, Reno School of Medicine Integrated Clinical Services, Inc.
All right. So agenda item number 10 is the subject matter of this particular audit. This is the financial statement for ICS for the year ended June 30, 2019, compared to 2018. The end product of the audit process is actually summarized on pages 3 through 5 of that document. This is our opinion. And in our opinion, these financial statements are fairly stated. So this is a clean, unmodified opinion. So congratulations to ICS for that result. The financial statements for the year follow, along with the management's discussion and analysis, kind of same sort of format as we saw for INSHI, just a much smaller document. And then the findings associated with our internal control observations are at the very back of the document. And I'm going to have you flip to the one finding that we reported during the year. This is on page 42 of 43. And this is categorized as a material weakness in internal controls with respect to the very issue that we just talked about, the $1.3 million gift that was recorded in 2018. The realization was made it didn't belong there, but the financial statements weren't corrected timely. They weren't corrected until the next year, 2019. And simply because of the magnitude of it in relation to ICS, we've categorized that one as a material weakness and control. And our recommendation is, you know, whenever there's a subsequent event that you learn about after the end of the fiscal year that has a material impact, you want to go back and, you know, consider the corrections needed to those financial statements versus carrying it forward to the next fiscal year. There is a corrective action plan that the management team has pulled together. That's on page 43 of 43, and you'll see that management is in agreement with that recommendation. Any questions on agenda item number 10?
Any questions? No. So essentially the $1 million would have the effect of the 2018 making it look like they made $1 million more on their bottom line.
Correct.
And then $1 million less this year.
Yeah, it needed to be, yeah. By correcting it in 2019, it actually understated 2019 results. So the recommendation was to push it back to 18 where it belonged, so 2019 could show as it really was. It wasn't underreported for the correction of an error that really was related to the prior year.
Any other questions? Motion to accept. So moved, Regent Del Carlo, second from Regent Hayes. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed. Motion passes. We'll go on to item number 11, communication with those charged with governance, University of Nevada, Las Vegas, Medicine, Inc.
All right. So we're moving on now to UNLV Medicine, of course, which is the practice plan for UNLV. This first document, structure very similar to what we've just gone through with the last two audits. And the areas of focus for this particular audit, as you might expect, are very similar to the practice plan for ICS. It's all about the patient service revenue, the contractual revenue, also the pharmacy revenue, at UNLV, proper revenue recognition, and proper recording of receivables, along with the right judgments about allowance for contractual reserves and bad debts. That is the big area of focus for this audit. Flipping ahead to page 13 of 35 in this document, these are the list of adjustments. None of these met the threshold to actually record in the financial statements. Management thought they were not material. We were comfortable with that conclusion, but again, we list those here just so you can have a visual of what they are. So those are listed on pages 13 and 14 of the document. One of those past adjustments, actually the second one, the $382,000 one, is the subject matter of an internal control recommendation that we will get to when we go to the next agenda item. On page 15 of 35 of the document, pages 15 and 16, some of the other required communications that go with audits are summarized on this page. And there's two that I just want to highlight for you that are specific to UNLV Medicine. And the first is the issue of going concern, and this is on page 14. As a new entity that's so critically tied to UNLV, there's an obvious financial support assumption that goes with that. And so from the standpoint of standalone financial statements and an audit, we have to think about that in the context of, going concern. And so the going concern assumption presumes that relationship and that financial commitment from UNLV. So as part of the audit process, we look at the written representation from UNLV with respect to that commitment. The other thing that I want to mention with respect to the required communications is on page 15. And you'll see in the slide deck there is a line item that says significant difficulties encountered during the audit, and there's nothing listed to it. And so what I did want to point out here is that last year there was significant difficulties experienced in that audit, and that is not something we have to report every day, but it was meaningful enough last year where we felt compelled to bring it to your attention. And I'm very happy to report that this year there is no similar issue that we needed to report. The cooperation and professionalism exhibited by the finance team at UNLV Medicine was exactly what we would have expected. So just wanted to acknowledge that group for the big step forward in that regard. That summarizes what I'd like to cover on agenda item number 11.
Any questions on item 11? Seeing none, we'll go on to item 12, Financial Statements, University of Nevada, Las Vegas, Medicine, Incorporated.
All right. Agenda item number 12 covers the actual financial statement itself of UNLV Medicine. Again, structure's the same. Starts with management's discussion and analysis, includes the financial statements themselves with a section in the back outlining the findings for the year. Our piece of this document with respect to the financial statement audit, in our opinion, is summarized on pages 3 through 5 of this document. And similar to what we've seen for the other two financial statement audits, this is an unmodified opinion, clean opinion, that we believe these financial statements are fairly stated. The financial statements follow, but I'm going to have you flip to the back of this document, and we will focus on the one finding that was carried forward, wasn't carried forward from the prior year, was really kind of a new issue for fiscal 2019, but it related to, actually to fiscal 2018 revenue. And the issue was that there was $382,000 worth of patient visits revenue that actually were recorded in fiscal 2019 that really related to the prior year. And as much as there were controls to look back and make sure that all the patient visits were captured in the record, in the records, there were some that weren't caught by the internal control system, so therefore they didn't get recorded as revenue into the subsequent fiscal year. Our recommendation is just really to continue to monitor that clean cutoff between years, so this is not an issue that repeats. Thankfully, it was not an issue that came up with the 2019 cutoff, so this was a beginning of year issue, not an end of year issue. Management has pulled together a corrective action plan, and you'll see that on page 33 of 33. And management does agree with this finding and this particular recommendation. So that is the audit results for UNLV Medicine. And I should mention there, we did have material weakness that we reported in the prior year with respect to UNLV Medicine and a couple of other significant deficiencies, and those are not repeating findings for this year. So that was a good step forward as well.
Any questions? Seeing none, I do have a disclosure. I was previously a student in the Gaming Innovation course at UNLV, where I developed a casino game. If the game is marketed and sold, I will be required to pay UNLV in the form of shared royalties pursuant to a standard contract that all students in the course were required to sign. I disclosed this relationship under NRS Chapter 281A, as recommended by the Nevada Commission on Ethics. And with that, I will vote. But do I have a motion to accept this report? So moved by Regent Hayes, second by Regent Del Carlo. All in favor say aye. Chief Internal Auditor had a comment, please.
Thank you, Joe Sumner, for the record. And I just want to thank him for emphasizing some of the issues that didn't get repeated in prior years, not only on this report, but on really all three reports that she made. And just wanted to recognize on the record, I think this committee already realizes, but want to say it anyway, just the amount of people and the amount of person power that goes into making these audits happen, controllers at the institution, financial personnel, system admin, financial aid personnel, IT personnel. Obviously, we're talking about med school and practice plan personnel. So just really appreciate all the efforts. Internal audit sort of gets a global view of all of this coming together, especially at the tail end of it. And just really appreciated everyone's efforts on all fronts. So,
and I will echo that as well. I see many of those people here in the room today, and I know a lot of them are online. So our thanks to everyone for their preparedness, hard work, and taking this process seriously.
With that, we do have a motion and a second. We'll just do that one more time. So all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, good. So we'll move on to item 13, new business. Does anybody have any new business? Regent Hayes?
Not as much new business as just wanted to. I saw Joe out in the hallway, and I was just telling him, as I read through the materials for this meeting, I just realized what a great job we have from him and his team. As he mentioned, it's a whole work in progress, but just wanted to second that. I told Joe, but I don't know that I have a chance to tell everybody that worked on it, so wanted to say, I mean, this is outstanding. I mean, we didn't have a ton of questions today because it was so thoroughly reported in here that as I read through it, it was great. So I just think you guys are doing a great job, and thank you very much.
Regent Del Carlo?
I just want to echo what Regent Hayes said, too, and we're doing a lot of things right, and so it's nice. There's nothing major here. I mean, this is pretty standard stuff, so good.
The only new business thing, and I've already talked to Chief Internal Auditor Joe Sumberry about it, is one of the findings is about having this new plan for a new financial aid requirement, and I'd like us to have a follow-up agenda item here in, maybe June or something like that, to make sure that plan exists, because all they were looking for this year is to see if they had a plan. I want to see to make sure that plan has been developed. Any other new business? Seeing none, we'll go to item 14. Is there any public comment in Elko? It does not look like it. Is there any public comment in Reno?
No public comment in Elko.
Oh, thank you. Any public comment in Reno?
There's none in Reno.
Any public comment in Las Vegas? Seeing none, this meeting is adjourned.